Megan, I have been using our sponsor Element, that's L-M-N-T, to boost my hydration for over a month now, and I'm really loving it. I'm just not very good at drinking plain water, and I love the taste when I pop one of these little packets, I like orange or grapefruit, into a big bottle of water. It's kind of fruity and salty, and it just helps me hydrate better overall.
Element is a zero-sugar electrolyte drink mix born from the growing body of research that shows the best health outcomes occur with higher sodium levels. Each little pack delivers a significant dose of electrolytes, but minus sugar, artificial colors, and other iffy ingredients. Element's flavors are so unique, like fruity watermelon salt and spicy sweet mango chili. And we're going to set our listeners up with a variety pack so you can find your favorite.
Right. You can receive a free Element sample pack containing 8 flavors with any drink mix purchase when you purchase through our custom link, drinkelement.com/momhour. That's DRINKELMNT/momhour. This offer is available exclusively through our partnership and is available for both new and returning customers. And if you're an Element insider, you'll have first access to Element Sparkling, a bold can of sparkling electrolyte water. Again, it's drinklmnt.com/momhour.
Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Megan.
We're two moms with 8 kids between us, from little to grown.
We're in different areas of the country and in different stages of life.
But we both know that motherhood's a lot easier when real moms share tips and encouragement.
And remind you that it's really all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour. Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode 223 of The Mom Hour. I am Megan Francis, here as always with Sarah Powers. Hey, Sarah.
223?
223.
223. Are we going to have this problem again?
Okay, wait a second. Now, I admitted that I was having a problem with being able to say numbers, and you said to say 223.
Well, I didn't literally mean 223. Just like...
if you plant the idea, it's all... Okay, you guys, you know that I have problems with like any numbers above 99, apparently. This has been going on now for 2 years.
I thought we were safe in the 200s, but apparently nope. We've hit your stumbling block.
It's the two and the two.
Okay.
223.
223
of the Mom Hour. Hello.
Hi.
And we are doing one of the things that we love to do, which is answer your questions.
Yes.
It's like our favorites.
It is one of our favorites. We have really good ones this week and next week. So we like to do these in pairs. So today and then a week from today, we will take your questions, give our answers. I don't know. Every once in a while, I feel the need to give a little disclaimer that you guys know we are not experts. It says so right in the intro of our show. So this is more, I think, like I picture it like an open forum for us to be like, huh, yeah, here's how we handled that when our kids were little. So I don't know. Take it as always with a gigantic grain of salt and the knowledge that you guys also have great instincts and probably are surrounded by otherwise moms in your circles. So we are just two voices and we don't know everything.
I don't even know how to say numbers correctly. So you know that I'm not an expert. But you know what's funny about that, Sarah, is so often, particularly when someone calls in and records their voice, which is our favorite, we just love to hear your voices, is that I kind of feel like they answer their own question while asking it. And a lot of times then I feel like we just kind of validate exactly what they already said.
Yes.
So I think you guys, you know what you're doing.
Yep. You definitely know what you're doing. You know that we are not the end all be all, but I think as the size of our show grows and our visibility grows, like I never want it to be misinterpreted that Megan and Sarah are prescribing what to do. Cause we both actually really like being asked for advice. And I know I can get a little excited and probably sound more prescriptive than I mean to be. So there you go. I'm dialing it back today.
You're disclaiming a lot, but that's okay. That's what you do. That's what you do.
Megan, the end of the school year and kickoff to summer is a busy time of the year for families, but we can all eat stress-free and hit our wellness goals with ready-to-eat meals from our sponsor, Factor.
Factor's delicious meals are never frozen and can be ready to eat in just 2 minutes. You can pick from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular choices like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Plus, they have more than 60 add-ons like breakfast, lunch, snacks, and beverages to keep you fueled all day long.
So our team was comparing notes recently on our favorite Factor meals, and Katie loved the herb-crusted chicken with mashed cauliflower and toasted almond green beans. I loved that one too. And get this, so did her little boy, Charlie. She heated it up for lunch one day, and Charlie, who's three, ate almost all of the green beans. I mean, that's quite an endorsement, right?
I was going to say, what a parenting win. And I get it, Charlie. Those green beans are crazy good. And if you really want to treat yourself, they even have meals with filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. Listeners, head to factormeals.com/momhour50 and use code momhour50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code momhour50 at factormeals.com/momhour50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. We are welcoming back Vionic as a sponsor today. And Sarah, I will be honest. I was sorting through my warmer weather wardrobe the other day, and it could seriously use a refresh. But you know what's good to go? My shoes. I've got a great selection to choose from thanks to the Vionic Vitals collection. And lately, the pair I keep putting on again and again is the Uptown Loafer. I have two pairs, one in sand suede and the other in camel leather. But please don't make me pick a favorite.
Oh, I won't. I'll let you keep both. That's so funny, Megan, because I was a little jealous of your Uptown Loafers. I was the last one on our team to get a pair, but I just did. I also got mine in the sand suede, and I think I've worn them like four times this week. They really finish off a cute spring outfit. The Vionic Vitals collection has the best essential styles for everyday wear to get you ready for spring. And no matter what shoes you choose, you'll be on the go in comfort because every single pair of Vionic shoes delivers their trademark VioMotion technology for a difference you can feel. Vionic sandals, sneakers, and flats all offer incredible support, stability, and cushioning, and every pair comes with a 30-day risk-free trial, so it's easy to try them out.
Use code THEMOMHOUR15 at checkout for 15% off your entire order at vionicshoes.com when you log into your account. That's a one-time use only. Vionic shoes. Wearable well-being for your feet. Okay, so our first question is from Autumn. It comes in via email, so I will go ahead and read it. Autumn says, "Hey, Megan and Sarah, I have a question regarding my 4.5-year-old. In his dramatic play, he's been experimenting quite a bit with killing the beast, thank you, Beauty and the Beast, trying to attack his sister with an imaginary bow and arrow, being the bad guy who's going to get mama with his powers, capturing the heffalump, well, this kid has like a huge imagination, and getting him with an imaginary sword, etc. He hasn't been exposed to violent content, and this is not at all something we've encouraged. Is it possible he might be picking up on his behaviors from other kids at preschool? Oh, it's possible. He may be picking up on these behaviors from other kids at preschool. My question is, how should I react to this? I've tried to at least draw the line at we don't pretend to kill or hurt people, but I'm stuck at where to go from there. I feel like he's working through the concept of good versus bad through play, but I'm not sure how I should redirect this or if I should intervene at all. Maybe it's positive. Any thoughts? I just don't want him to be the kid on the playground going after other kids and scaring them. Thank you." Yeah, we get that, huh?
Yes. None of us wants that to be our kid. And for many of us, that has been our kid and we all turned out okay. So even if that does happen. So I'll just share briefly how this has worked in my house. I really do believe that kids work through a lot of ideas through imaginative play. And so including hard stuff, including, like Autumn says, good and evil, bad and good, bad guys and good guys. And no matter what media they've been exposed to, or maybe there is some of this play coming from preschool, the desire to play it out and sometimes to play it out repeatedly, like almost scripted over and over. One of my children became obsessed with the scene in the original Lion King, not the new one that's out, but the original animated one where Scar kind of pushes Mufasa off the cliff, which is a terrifying scene, by the way, Disney.
Can I point out that I have heard, and I haven't seen it, but I've heard that like the new version is scene for scene exactly the same, but it just get to see it like live.
It is. It's it is very realistic. So, and that child wanted to make believe that over and over and over again. And eventually she grew out of that. So what I chose to see was, for the most part, this is sort of a phase. And for in general, I think working through things with imaginative play can be a very positive thing. And I think that's where Autumn was going with that. However, a couple of things to note. I do think sometimes kids can get kind of stuck in their imaginary play, in particular kids who are very imaginative and who have a whole inner world. And when I have noticed that, I have found that just little redirection or little changing the script on my part has kind of nudged them in or out of it. And if a kid is super, super stuck, or they almost feel like it's obsessive, like they need to, like they can't move on until they replay this scene over and over again, I might consider just talking to somebody I trust or running that by somebody, just because I feel like that's where kids can get stuck. And then I almost feel like it's not as productive for their imaginative play. But garden variety, I be the bad guy, you be the good guy, I'm going to get you with my sword. I mostly let all of that play out. And what we chose to focus on in our house was the consent of the person being played with. So my kids know I don't like to have anything pointed at me that resembles a shooting weapon of any kind. And so I would just say for myself, please don't point that at me or pretend to shoot me, because I find real guns very scary and that makes me feel afraid. Please stop. And so I've drawn the line for myself and sort of taught them to respect that. And so it's more about the consent of the players than it is about any one given behavior is how, and that worked for many phases and many years for my kids.
Yeah, and I have the same like visceral reaction to having things pointed at me.
I still don't like it.
No, I still don't like it. And I'll tell little stranger yes. children mm-hmm. to knock it off in a very kind way.
Yeah.
So I will totally like echo everything you're saying. I want to point out that because I've been at this parenting rodeo for a while now, that I think that the attitudes toward violent play shift a lot culturally. Mm-hmm. I think right now people might be a little more on edge about it because there's so much violence happening in our lives and mm-hmm. we're seeing it in the media. And so it kind of does seem to go just like any trend, right? There's always a spectrum of how people feel about it. And I think it tends to shift back and forth from one end to the other. So I've seen kind of typical advice all over the place when it comes to violent play in kids. But what I also believe, because from everything that I've read, it is developmentally normal for kids to work this stuff out, and that this kind of play has been going back centuries. It's mm-hmm. not what's going to turn a kid, you know, a child to grow up into a violent sociopath. And it may not be inspired by them watching a violent video game or something. A lot of it just is intrinsically coming out. They might be inspired by stuff that they see, but like that's not where it came from. Mm-hmm. So my rule was always, you know, just don't run ramshod over people. Like, it's not okay to get in people's faces and point things and engage them in play they don't want to be part of. But otherwise, like, just make sure it's okay. And that's okay. And I pretty much stayed out of it. Now your kid's school might have a very different rule, mm-hmm. but I feel like if your child understands it has to be consensual, they're at least not going to be a playground tyrant. Mm-hmm. And even if your kid's school has a different rule, I think that kids are pretty good at understanding there's a difference between what's allowed at home mm-hmm. and what's allowed at school, or maybe what's allowed at one home and allowed at a different home. Mm-hmm. Like, kids pick that stuff
especially
up.
A 4.5-year-old.
Yeah. So I think it's okay for the rule at home to be relaxed, but with this kind of caveat that everyone has to be in on the game if they're going to be engaged with.
Yes.
And then if at school the rule is we don't ever do violent play, your child, I think, will pick that up. And I don't feel like you have to change your at-home rules to exactly mirror those rules.
I totally agree. And I think when we think about it through the lens of how are other players feeling about this play, that is so easy to implement at home because, well, I had one kid who was very imaginative by himself, and maybe he was over there enacting violent dinosaur deaths, and he probably was. But a lot of times kids want or need a playmate. And that's where you can say very honestly, you know, honey, I'm tired of make-believing Beauty and the Beast kill the Beast today. Instead, what if we blah, 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 you know? And yep. So there's almost like this kind of play is often very social, not always, but often very social. And so if we focus on the relationship or, mm-hmm. you know, your buddy from school looks like he's not having very much fun, or I notice yeah. this is scary for him, so let's find something else to do. It's not making the violence itself or the make-believe bad, but it's recognizing that this is two are playing at this game. And if it's yeah. not, if the power dynamic is unequal, we need to find a different way.
Exactly.
And I've also, when I say like, it's all about consent and someone can say no, I recognize there's very often power dynamics where a kid doesn't feel like they can say no because they're younger or they're, you know, they're kind of having fun, but they're starting to feel a little uncomfortable. And so that's where I just kind of always have an ear tuned in, and I might just kind of breeze in and be like, hey, is this still fun for everybody? Because the same person gets their head cut off in this make-believe right. over and over again.
Over and over.
I'm just noticing a pattern here. Yes. So I don't mean that like it's up to the littlest kid to always stick up for themselves. I do think that's a learning process. But I think with one ear open and then just letting a lot of it slide by and trusting that it's most likely a phase, I think you'll be good to go, Autumn.
Did I ever tell you the story about when I was 5 years old and my friend Fancy? I had a friend named Fancy.
I do kind of remember that name.
She played over and over again that she tied me to a tree and burned me at the stake. And my mom, I remember finally, my mom was always very hands off about that kind of stuff. But my mom finally came over and was like, nope, we are not doing this anymore. Like, she just couldn't. And I remember that really clearly, like being intervened for.
Yeah.
Because I think I was starting to get a little like, what? This is really weird. Why does this continue to happen? But I didn't feel like, well, it was Fancy's one chance. I couldn't let her down.
Yeah.
Can you see what I just did there? Anyway, my mom took care of it for me. But you know, you remember that being advocated for.
Yeah.
And it is sometimes a play can borderline get a little weird.
Yes. No, it can. And they do. Kids will work through weird stuff that will make you be like, ah, where did they hear that? Where did they see that? And then I think you just wait a beat, just a beat. You don't like, you don't say, oh, it's fine, it's all normal. Like, you still are tuned in, but you can wait a beat and like, most likely it's normal. That's my new prescription for everything. Most likely it's normal.
Most likely it's
normal. If not, see a professional.
And it just, it's also, you know, we get so freaked out about what our kids are exposed to nowadays in video games and cartoons, but I guarantee Fancy was not playing a video game about burning witches at the stake. So she picked up on that. Who knows how? It could have been out of a book that was lying open on a table. You know, like, who knows what madness she was working out in her head. But the point is that this is how kids do it. And it's probably normal.
What's Fancy up to these days?
I have no idea. She moved away. I never got to play with Fancy again.
Just curious if she's tying people up. Just curious.
I don't know.
Okay. Well, Autumn, you're doing a great job, and keep us posted on how things are going. So our next question came in via SpeakPipe, which allows you guys to record your voices and leave us a voicemail. And this one came in just yesterday, and I was really, really happy to receive it. And Megan, this question is mostly for you. It's from Nancy, and we will listen to it now.
Hey, ladies, I love your show. Boy, do I wish the podcast medium was around when I had littles. I have kids similar in ages to Megan, 21, 18, 15, and 12, one boy and three girls. I would love to hear what the family dynamics are having young adult children living in your home. My oldest and only son just barely moved out a few months ago to live on campus at the university he attends, and my second oldest is heading to college in just a few days. I can't figure out if I'm coming or going with these adult kids. I miss them when they are gone, but when they pop in at home with their independent personalities, I don't know what to make of it. I want my kids to launch and be their own people, and they are great kids, but some of their crazy and normal choices make me nuts. How do I encourage their independence and not let them get in the way of the rest of the child rearing we are trying to do at home? Any advice for me?
Okay, I love this question. Thank you, Nancy. Okay, so it is definitely an adjustment. I was exposed to a term a few years ago called soiling the nest, which is what baby birds do before their moms kick them out.
Interesting.
When the baby bird starts literally soiling their nest, it's like time for them to go. And there's this phenomenon that's been documented and watched and researched where teenage kids start to do the same. Often that starts to happen before like the launch phase. That starts to be like the late high school when you're like, okay, it's time for you to go. But I do think in general, kids are starting to do some of these things later and later. Some of the stuff that would have made a kid want to leave home and join the army when they were 17 before, I feel like we're just kind of circling around to it a little bit later now. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I think that soiling the nest is happening like at concurrently with having left the nest. Mm. And then they come home and like kick it all up on the week, like get feathers and poop everywhere on the weekends. So, So I guess I'll just give you a big, like, I'm with you. I hear what you're saying. I'm there. Of my two adult children, one has completely launched, like completely flown. Independently. He has flown, and the other is more slowly working toward it. So I have to treat the two situations differently, which is hard because they're both adults. They're both young adults, and I can't have exactly the same expectations of them because they're different people and their lives are different now. So I guess just to like commiserate with you, it is weird to have adult kids come and go however they feel like. Mm. They kind of blow in and out. I've noticed in particular the one who's completely left, although he comes home every single weekend, he kind of doesn't expect to have to do anything when he comes home. He doesn't really expect to have to participate in a family dinner or to ever have to do chores. And I've gotten a little bit of attitude from him when I've asked him to take the trash out, and it's not his job anymore. But he's standing right there and he's eating my food.
Mm-hmm. Right? And he's still a part of, he's still your kid. You're still his mom and he's in the house.
He's part of the family life. Yeah. Yes. So I've had to have conversations like, you can't just blow in and out. There's courtesy. If you're going to leave and not come back tonight, please let me know. Mm-hmm. Likewise, if you're going to come back home at 2 a.m., let me know. I don't want to wake up in the middle of the night and hear my door slam. It's like really alarming. And I feel like when he's gone during the week, it's not like I'm checking in with him every night saying, where are you? But when he's in my home, that's very different. Yes. So there's a difference. And if you're in my orbit, like you're part of the family unit and you need to, that doesn't mean you have to be around all the time. I understand you're catching up with your friends. You work all week or whatever. You're going to school, whatever you've got going on. I try to be tolerant of that. But still just that basic respect that we're still your family and you can't just come and go however you feel like. It's disruptive. It's confusing to the younger siblings. Mm-hmm. Like they want to hang out with the olders and they're like, why are they never here? Mm-hmm. So for the most part, that has just been an adjustment.
I'm going to jump in with a question. Sure. Do you feel like you had anything to compare to? So I know your older sister has grown kids, but I could imagine this being a phase where there's not a lot said or written about what that relationship is like and almost feeling like it's uncharted territory. Like what is our relationship now?
Well, it's very hard to find. People don't write a lot about parenting older teenagers and young adults in general. So it is hard to find. But also when it's written about, people tend to think that like all young adults are following the same thing where like they all go off to college, you know, the year after their senior year of high school, after they graduate. And then they're just at college all year, maybe come home every now and then for a holiday, and then they're home all summer. And that's not how it works for a lot of kids. Like, that's not how it worked for either of mine. My sister's kids were a great example because they're all, except for the youngest, there's three young adults, and they have all come and gone, lived with her for a while, moved out for a while, moved back for a while, moved out for a while. They've all staggered, like, gone to college for a year, worked for a year, kind of figure out what they're doing. And so they've all, like, adulted eventually. But it's just been a very different on-ramp. And what I've seen is that her house and what I've admired about what she does is that her house is just kind of this like haven and the kids want to be there. Like they want to come home. They want to see her. They want to hang out. But they're not there all the time. They don't expect to be able to live there. They're not taking advantage. It's just, it's like a safe place to land if it's needed. And that's kind of how I see myself. And, you know, like with their choices, I mean, as long as it's not directly affecting me, for example, being rude about comings and goings and things like that. Like or if they're going to really screw their lives up, you know, if they were like on drugs or something, that would be a different story. But I kind of see this as like, I can offer you some guidance, but I don't really get to be the mom the same way I did when they were 17. Mm-hmm. And even if I were paying for their education fully or like, you know, financially helping out, which I am to some degree with both my young adults, like, I still just don't, I feel like we're in this transition period. I get to have some say over how that money is spent. But if all I do is like, let them leave and live someplace else and then monitor them the entire time, we're not doing what we need to be doing right now. Mm-hmm. Like the thing we need to be doing right now is not me controlling all their lives, but they're just farther away. Mm-hmm. Like that doesn't make any sense to me at all. So I'm available. Like if they need advice or if they want to talk about something, I ask a lot of leading questions. But as long as it looks like they're making progress and figuring stuff out, I kind of try to keep myself at arm's length. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really about what that goal is. So my goal is to be a person in place my kids, as they grow, want to come back to and want to have a relationship with. And right now we're in the most awkward phase. Like this middle stage is like, they will eventually, like, you remember how you felt about your parents when you were 18, 19, 20, 21? Like, you didn't have a lot of time for them. Like you didn't really have a lot. You didn't really, not that you didn't respect them, but like you were learning how to take other people's.
Right. It's that necessary opinions. Separation.
Yeah, like you were separating. And so you didn't, it's just that they weren't as relevant. Mm-hmm. I don't remember thinking a whole lot about my parents when I was that age. Like they were always there, but like, and then later when I was a young adult, suddenly they became important and like, wow, they really knew a lot about this and that thing. And it was kind of like a big about face where I really wanted to hang out with my parents when I was a young adult. It just took me a while to get back there. So that's like my goal is to get there.
Yeah.
And I kind of just kind of keep that goal in mind and try not to get offended when they act like kind of indifferent to me right now, which is happening.
Yeah. I love it. I have nothing to say except to thank you for going first.
Well, and thanks, Nancy, for the question, because I totally agree. Like, sometimes it's really hard to put appropriate distance without being distant.
I loved the way she worded a lot of her questions. Like, she isn't trying to hold them back, but at the same time, she's still parenting younger children and has expectations for the home. So,
yeah. Well, and that can be tough too. Like, trying to keep things, like, kind of trying to keep the wheels on the bus for the youngers while the olders aren't really participating in or contributing to that. It can be really frustrating. And that's the thing. To me, like, those are the things I really put my foot down about, because it's a courtesy. Mm-hmm. It's a courtesy issue. And, like, you don't really just get to blow through here and treat us like we're disposable. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it goes both ways. I don't really get to control their lives anymore either. Right. So, like, there has to be that balance.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah.
We are welcoming back Ritual as a sponsor today. Megan, we both try to make healthy choices, but, you know, sometimes it's tricky to sort through fact and fiction when it comes to supplements and vitamins to figure out just what they're doing for us. That's why I'm glad Ritual keeps studying their products and sharing the results, especially as it relates to women, since women are the focus of all Ritual's products, including the Essential for Women 18 Plus Multivitamin.
And the results are super reassuring. Just as an example, Ritual conducted a university-led clinical trial for their Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin, and it was shown to increase vitamin D levels by 43% and omega-3 DHA levels by 41% in just 12 weeks. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin is made with high-quality and traceable key nutrients in clean, bioavailable forms with 9 key nutrients in 2 capsules per day. Plus, they are leading the industry when it comes to sustainability. They use lower carbon packaging and prioritize sustainably sourced ingredients. That kind of thoughtfulness really matters to me.
No more shady business. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus is a multivitamin you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/themomhour. Start Ritual or add the Essential for Women 18 Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/themomhour for 25% off. Megan, our sponsor, Carnegie Hall Kids, is a free website for kids ages 5 to 12 to learn about music through fun games and quizzes. I'm really excited to tell everybody about their new Sights You Can Hear quiz. This is really cool. It's an online quiz you can do with your kids or they can do on their own, and it plays a piece of music and then you guess what visual image or scene it sounds like.
Our listeners may have heard the name Carnegie Hall because of their live performances, but they might not know about all the educational resources they also have for kids and families on their website.
Carnegie Hall Kids ignites imagination in children, offering activities that both encourage musical curiosity and develop knowledge of musical concepts. And did we mention free? If you haven't yet, you're definitely going to want to check out Carnegie Hall Kids' interactive musical explorers around the world map. It teaches kids different musical traditions like Vietnamese folk, cumbia from Colombia, bluegrass and jazz from the U.S., and more.
Start the musical journey early and go to kids.carnegiehall.org to check out fun, child-friendly games and quizzes. That's kids.carnegiehall.org.
Okay, so our next question comes from Katie, and it is kind of in response to an episode we just did recently about families starting school for the first time, but her question starts a little younger, so we'll listen.
Hi, Megan and Sarah. This is Katie from Hendersonville, North Carolina, and I have a question. My 15-month-old will start preschool for the first time on September 3rd, just after Labor Day, as a walker. She's in their youngest class, and I know you guys recently did an episode about starting elementary school and starting middle school, but didn't know if you had some tips or thoughts on starting preschool. Would love to hear what you have to say. Thanks.
Well, Katie, thank you for calling in that question. Again, guys, we love hearing your voices, love playing your voices on the show. So I really kind of, this took me back because I started my oldest in a kind of daycare preschool situation about 3 days a week when she was 14 months. So just really very similar age. We made it through the first year with like a hybrid part-time nanny / my mom situation. So it was our first experience with any kind of school or childcare, formal childcare outside the home. And I remember she was barely walking. And so when you said it's like the walkers group, I just can picture this little class of they're toddlers, but they're not preschoolers yet. It's definitely like a hybrid baby toddler situation. So I guess I'll cut to the tough stuff first, and that is that separation anxiety is so normal at this age and so extreme at this age for many kids, that if you wrote to us in 3 months and said, nope, she never had problems separating at all, I would say high five, but you got really lucky. Yep. So like, it's so normal that you're going to come to expect it. And this age seems particularly hard with separation because they're starting to be verbal. I remember Allegra saying little sentences like, mama, no, no school, stay, mama. Like these little like 2-3 word sentences and you're like, oh my
God. They're heartbreaking.
Yes. They're heartbreaking. So A, just know that it's really normal. I think most schools of this age are so used to it. And you can really just lean in and trust that however the teacher is used to handling it in that classroom, whatever guidance they give you, I think for the most part, I would say follow along because they've done this a gazillion times. It's not just your kid. It's nothing to be embarrassed about. It doesn't mean that the school or the teacher isn't right. The tips that worked for me were keeping goodbyes very consistent and very relatively short, not sneaking out, but not lingering for 10 minutes in the classroom one day. And then the next day I'm late for a meeting at work and I've got to like drop and run. So trying to like keep it short, sweet, and consistent each time. And then, you know, you can ask later, like how long did they cry? How long? But I have had kids cry for an entire year at preschool drop off and still been thriving in preschool. So when I say it lasts, it's not like it's for a week. For some kids, it's many months and it's part of the drop off and it's hard.
It's almost their routine. It becomes their routine. Like, it's like kids can kind of get themselves like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like they attach to an idea that when mama leaves, I cry. But if the preschool teacher or daycare worker tells you that they stopped crying 5 minutes after you left, that is almost entirely true. Like, do not doubt them. I know it sounds impossible, but that's so often the way it really is.
It really is. And I really think that, especially if you've already vetted this place and you've chosen it because you like the people, you can trust what they say about this kind of thing. I have seen in a preschool situation, I have seen a couple of drop-off criers that I think that the school and the parents had to almost take it to the next level. Like, okay, this is becoming a little disruptive or this is, but that's hundreds and hundreds of kids I've watched being dropped off in years and years. And so, okay, so that part's normal. I think one of the positives that I really enjoyed at this age was the verbal explosion that's happening between 1 and 2 and the singing and the socialization is a really fun age to have them in some kind of environment like this. And the cool thing about, you know, sending a little toddler off to school is they're going to come home and start to be able to tell you things that happen. And I just remember I have really fond memories of a very young, you know, 1.5-year-old trying to tell me little things that happened or sing a song that they learned at school. And for me, it was the first time we'd been like really separated like that, where she was having this whole experience outside of me. And to this day, that's one of the things I value about sending my kids to school is that they get something that I'm not providing at home. They get a richness of experience. They get to learn to make friends. And so I have fond memories of that even at really little ages. But I think we've talked about toddlers and friends and sharing and stuff before on the show, but you can't expect a lot from these first, they're still parallel playing for the most part at school. So if you are the type to get really excited about them making friends and being nice to their friends, just know it is kind of a train wreck when you walk into like a toddler daycare room. Kids are still grabbing from each other. Teachers are running interference. It's maybe not going to look like what a 3.5-year-old preschool classroom will look like someday, but I still think there's some really cool experiences for toddlers to have. So I don't even think that's advice, just some memories for me.
And I think that like the only other thing that I would say is if your 15-month-old has not been around a lot of other babies her age precisely, then some weird behaviors might come out while they're in the middle of that sort of hot mess that is a 15-month-old and probably, I bet it's probably a 12 to 18-month class or something like that. And like that's when kids start doing weird stuff, like pulling hair and biting and I just don't give that, like you can look back through our archives how many times we've had to talk about biting or pulling hair and things like on the show. It's just so normal and predictable that like it's, I wouldn't worry about it.
I wouldn't either, especially if you have a basic level of trust in this program that you've chosen. Yeah. There will be a biter. Maybe it's your kid. Maybe it's not, but there will be a biter in a 12 to, And things start to really calm down, I think, after two, but those, those 1 year olds in a room. I also want to talk about germs real quick, because this is another, I kind of forgot about getting sick. Whenever you're sending your kid away for the first time, whether you wait till they're four or they're in daycare from when they're 6 weeks, the reality of illness is just, it's just something we've all been through. And hopefully your preschool facility has, you know, decent policies around it and the other parents are conscientious, but it's, I don't know any other advice other than to grin and bear it, wash your hands and, you know, have the nurse line on speed dial, because 1 year olds and germs, it's tough. So I've just
been there. Be
ready
for that like green snot.
Yep. The green snot.
The ever, you know, ubiquitous
green nose. And if you have guilt about it, just know it would happen whether you delayed this by a year or two or had started it a year ago. I mean, it's that initial kind of exposure. And so, green snot. We've all been there. Well, good luck, Katie, sending that little one off. And I will also link in the show notes. We have one more. It's called Things We Shouldn't Have Freaked Out About, Starting School Edition. And it tried to cover a lot of ages, but we talked a lot about first early preschool experiences. So I'll link that up as well. You might find some more in there. Okay, so our last question for today comes from Jamie by email, so I will read it. Hello, Sarah and Megan. Jamie here from Apex, North Carolina. Here's my question, and it's a loaded one. All right, Jamie. My wife, Amanda, and I have an 18-month-old son and have already begun to wonder how we will be addressing gender identity and sexual orientation topics with him as he gets older, both specifically as those topics relate to him and also generally in the people he sees. I'm curious how you all have brought discussions about this minority group into your family. I think moms are the most well-positioned group to raise a generation of kids who are aware and supportive of LGBTQ issues. I realize this is an enormous topic and one you guys may not want to touch for a variety of reasons, and that's okay. However, one of my favorite episodes to date is the one where you two, quote, talk awkwardly about race. And that's in quotes because that was what we named the episode, which told me you will take on tough topics and ultimately gave me the courage to send this email. You both rock. I'm so grateful for your creative and real perspectives. Thank you, Jamie.
Jamie, thank you so much. I'm really glad you asked this question, actually, because it's something that's been on my mind. But it's nice to have an intro.
Yeah.
Something we either one of us has expertise in. So the fact that you asked it, because you just kind of set us up.
Yeah. And you and your family are welcome in our community.
Yeah. So I would be honest and say this is definitely something I could have stood to be more proactive about when my kids were younger. I kind of always took this really casual, like, all families are different approach. And I did make sure that my kids were exposed to different kinds of families. But what I've noticed looking back now is that that doesn't necessarily mean we naturally encountered families all over the spectrum. For example, I've had several male couple friends, same-sex male couples with children. But I've had far fewer friendships with same-sex female couples with children. I don't know why that is. Sometimes I actually think that moms are less likely to be recognized as a couple. And I don't know if it's because you just typically see, like, I don't know, like kids look around and they just see moms as moms.
Yeah.
Like, nobody really stands out. I've had kids say to me before when I would see them like outside of the context of the mom group, have no idea who I was. And I would say, oh, this little boy I was just talking to, Nate, was like 13. And I said, Nate, I've seen you a million times. Haven't you ever seen me hanging out? Like, I'm Owen's mom. And he's like, well, you're just one of the moms. So I think sometimes like that might be happening. But just in general, I think sometimes for whatever reason, we wind up with like one kind of person who doesn't fit that traditional nuclear family mold and not like the other. And then we forget that our kids aren't necessarily connecting the dots. Mm-hmm. Like that just because there might be this way a family looks and that way a family looks, they're not necessarily then going down the line and going, and also a family can look like that and that and that and that. So I think we have to be a little more proactive about it. And that did lead to me having some catching up to do later as the kids got older and had questions. I think the really good news is I think that kids are so much more wise and knowledgeable and smart about this stuff than definitely they were 10 years ago or 20. I have learned so much from having young friends. I do a lot of theater. And so I have a lot of young people in theater who are in their teens and 20s. And that's really made me really aware of a lot of things like trans issues, which weren't something that were on my radar. And I don't think we're on a lot of people's radars like 10 years ago.
Right.
Definitely things have changed and shifted a lot. So I just keep trying to remind myself, like, I probably haven't said this enough. Like, that's right. When it comes down to anything like this, where there's no harm in me talking about it, it's a current event, but it's not like a stressful current event. Right. You know what I mean? It's something that should be talked about and should be talked about positively. It's not like, oh my gosh, we have to have this talk today because I need for us to talk about LGBTQ, right, you know, issues. Like, it isn't like that. It's more like, hey, it's a positive thing. Like, there's this family. They're so cool. There's two moms. Like, and if you just normalize it over and over and over, you almost like really can't do it too much.
Yes.
And I probably could be even more, I could be even more proactive about that. But the good news is I think the kids are starting to do it for me now. Like, mm-hmm, the kids are almost seeing it and normalizing it and talking about it amongst themselves. And I live in a pretty conservative area and my kids' school is pretty small. And I will say on these issues, like, I feel like things they continue to just change so rapidly and there's so much more acceptance. So I don't know exactly if I'm even answering the question, except to say, like, I probably could have done a better job with that, but it's on my radar that the more I talk, the better.
Well, if I can, I think you did answer the question. And if I can sort of like restate it, I think, number one, ideally, we're surrounded by diversity. And unfortunately, it's not always easy to have representation of all groups in your kids' lives. And that's something I think about a lot in the area that I live. And so when there are gaps in the kids' experience, I think that's where the opportunity is to have those conversations, like you're saying. And so you've spoken to both sides of that. On the one hand, your kids weren't exposed to certain demographics and certain groups weren't as represented. On the other, as they've gotten older, their circles have diversified and it's become a part of their lives anyway. And I would think that in the background has been you with sort of a constant, establishment of what you believe in your home, which is that all families can be celebrated and are great. So I have a couple things to add. I think when I feel overwhelmed about what to say to my kids about anything, next week we're going to take another tough question about violence in the media. And I was thinking about that. Anytime I'm kind of overwhelmed about what exactly to say to my kids, I try to boil it down to what is the most simple truth. And after that, I answer their questions. So to me, the most simple truth here is that love is love and that all families and all humans are worthy. Like that's my simplest truth. And if I explain that and then maybe take a step further and talk about what that looks like out in the world, after that, I'm answering questions. And I feel a huge sense of relief when the questions are coming from the kids, because then you can be age appropriate. So I'll just give a little example. We had a little play date, got to hang out in San Francisco with my college friend, Patty, who's married to a woman, Erin. I went to their wedding a couple years ago, but the kids hadn't met them and hadn't met their new baby. And so when we were getting in the taxi to go over there, they said, who are we hanging out with again? I said, oh, my friend Patty and her wife, Erin, and they have a new baby. And Violet, who's 6 and a half, was like, cool. And I was like, yeah, I don't know that you've ever hung out with, you know, two women who are married to each other. And she's like, oh, yeah. And then the older two, I noticed, were looking at me and their questions were about biology, right? Because they understand a little bit more about how babies are made. So it wasn't judgment, but it was like, well, hold on. And I just said, yeah. And I just kind of let them look at me. And I think they didn't know whether to ask it in front of Violet. And I said, are you curious about kind of the science here? And they said, yeah. And so I gave literally a 15-second curbside, we're getting in the lift to go over there, explanation of a donor and a, you know, like the pregnancy. And they were like, okay, cool. So like, I feel like the questions led the way in that scenario, but it starts with like, how can I boil this down to the simplest truth that I believe and share that with my kids and then let their questions lead the way.
And then what they realize is it's not that complicated.
Like, right.
It's the same. This is the same, technology, the same science that a lot of opposite sex couples mm-hmm. are using to also have a family. Like, so, you know, then they're like, oh, well, okie doke.
Well, I think it's so easy to forget when we get all, you know, nervous, our heart starts beating.
Adult-y about it, yeah.
Is that the kids don't have the political context. They don't have the historical context. And while hopefully they'll grow into having those things, they don't have them when they're asking their questions. So our answers can be equally frank and mm-hmm. simple without some of the what we've carried about some of yeah. these issues. And so but that's hard to remember. It's hard to remember that this is a simpler question for them than the answer feels to us.
Yeah, totally agreed. Well, Jamie, I hope that that answered your question, and we appreciate it.
Yes, thank you again for sending that in, Jamie, and to everybody who sent in questions this week. If you guys are curious, we have all of our listener questions episodes archived at themomhour.com. There's one page where you can see all of them. And I lost count, but I think we've done this more than 20 times over the over the 4 years. So episodes like this, where we take on a variety of questions. And if you're new to the show, it's kind of a fun way to get a bunch of different parenting topics covered at once and get to know us. So that is all at themomhour.com. And I will link up in the show notes for this episode how you can look at all of those listener questions episodes. And next week, Megan, we're back for more.
Yeah, we'll talk to you soon.
Guess what, Megan? Over 10,000 teens are already using our sponsor, Erica, to help them unplug.
That is amazing. Erica, that's Erica with a K, is the social media health app for teens that gives them the tools to unplug whenever they need to for improved health, study focus, sleep, and daily balance. It's so cool how this works to hide distracting apps from your phone at the touch of a button, keeping them out of sight and out of mind without deleting your data.
Yeah, you know, teens really get that social media comes with risks, including addiction, and Erica helps them build healthy habits and self-regulation that will benefit them their whole lives. Tell your teens about Erica and save 20% on the Erica Family Plan with promo code THEMOMHOUR. Go to erica.app and search for plans. That's Erica with a K, Erika.app, and use code THEMOMHOUR to save 20%. Megan, you know what I love about our partner, the Essential Calendar? I love the product so much, of course, but I also love that it comes from a small business founded by two moms.
Right, just like us. Listeners, if you're drowning in details right now, like summer camps, travel plans, end of school year mayhem, give yourself the gift of the Essential Calendar, a seasonal, at-a-glance, poster-sized calendar for your wall. Get 10% off your order at theessentialcalendar.com/themomhour. That's 10% off at theessentialcalendar.com/themomhour.